It's the Metal Show with Gully and Joe. Welcome back. And this week we have a guest. We have Matt from Cryptopsy.
How's it going, Matt? I'm doing good. It's Matt from Cryptopsy.
Cryptopsy is the accent I can never. Yeah. But we've got a lot to talk about. We've got Matt's chosen an album for us to review this week. But I think first we'll go into the band's latest release, the second part of the Book of Suffering. Yeah, Matt, you've been the vocalist now for 10 years. You've joined the band when you were 20. You was obviously excited, but was there a bit of a knot in your stomach, like you was stepping into some big shoes and you was taking on a pretty big task?
To give like a bit of back history for people if they don't know what. You know, the history of Cryptopsy is before my time. There was an iconic singer who was in Cryptopsy called Lord Worm, who is an extremely influential death metal vocalist.
Yeah.
And then he left the band in 1996, 1997. He was replaced then by an equally iconic vocalist, but of a different style, called Mike DeSalvo. He was more of like a rapid-fire pit bull, as opposed to the bellowing death metal, you know, like bullfrog basset hound that Lord Worm is. So I had to, and then Lord Worm came back after Mike left, and I was presented with the opportunity to come into the band at that time. Now knowing all this now, back then I did not know much of it because I was not a death metal head. I was more from like a rock, hard rock, new metal, metalcore background. As much as everyone says I'm a deathcore vocalist, I never really got into that.
No, I don't like some of these labels they got now. They just piss me off, to be completely honest.
So I was absolutely extremely nervous because it's not like that, you know, I'm the biggest fan of the band and I get my opportunity, here's my shot. I knew that it was my shot to do something big because I knew Cryptopsy was a big influential band. I knew that it was important, but the band was also in a state of transition. They wanted to do something different, and that's how I got my gig, because if they wanted to go and, you know, record the Book of Suffering, the material that's on the Book of Suffering now, back then I would have not even been a candidate in their mind. But with what was happening with the material that became The Unspoken King and what I was capable of doing back then, in their mind, I was a perfect fit. So I was super nervous. I remember, you know, going through like the early material and trying to like decipher Lord Worm's lyrics into like his grunt patterns. And there was so many words and none of it fit. And I was, and my first show was like in Mexico and in Mexico. And I had to, you know, prep this whole set list of all this material I wasn't familiar with, and I was super, super nervous. And, you know, and I pulled it off to the best of my abilities, but when I go back now and watch these videos, I like cringe, and I've definitely been like a work in progress. I'll admit to that.
Well, it seems like you took the bull by the horns and ran with it, which is admirable, and you've certainly earned your place in the band since. And I think as well, you go on death metal forums or you watch reviews online, and there was kind of, with Cryptopsy, you get the people that kind of, they're not Cryptopsy fans, they're Lord Worm fans. You get that with Iron Maiden as well. It's like when you hear certain people, you're like, well, you're not an Iron Maiden fan, you're just a Bruce Dickinson fan, you know. And but it seems with this Book of Suffering, the last EP, and I'm bit by bit, reviews are filtering through now for part two, you're getting people have come round. So it's like you've got the people that kind of stopped listening a few years back, and they're going, oh, wow, you know, I'm back into them. I've been won over again. But the long-term fans that have stuck with the band and they're kind of going middle fingers, yeah, arseholes, we told you. So it's looking like it's come full circle, and yeah, it's like the newer fans have stuck with the band and the older fans are now coming back. So yeah, it looks like through perseverance and just sticking to what's true to yourselves, really, and not having to please people, it's paid off in the long run.
Yeah, and a lot of hard work, and you know, just getting into the jam room for myself and just pounding out, like with the band playing over the PA, like I just plug my phone in and I would just rip through set lists and just keep pushing, trying to articulate more and develop my tones a little bit better. We messed around with like some new voice on the tone two, which is something that just sort of just happened in studio. I like had done something and Chris, our guitarist, who's the producer, was like, try to do some voices in that. And it like stuck and we love it. And we're definitely going to use more of that voice there. My, we call it the Chris Bark because it's like Chris Barnes, but it sounds like a big like bulldog Doberman type thing. So the Chris Bark.
Yeah. It's hard to be a proficient death metal singer though. It's anyone can growl, but I've just got this point, and you probably heard me harp on about it in the Bleeding It review that we done. You have to be able to be understood. Anyone can go, that's easy to do. You got to be able to be understood, and you have to have a style, and you have to kind of do it in tune as well. And it can be really hard to nail that for me to take notice, because there is a lot of death metal bands out at the moment who are just sound like a fucking angry cookie monster, and it's a hard thing to capture and do it correctly, I feel.
Yeah, it's a fine art. There's a few masters out there that like have developed their own style throughout it all. Like if I had to pick like my favorite death metal vocalist right now, you know, there'd be Travis Ryan from Cattle Decap. He's got something extremely interesting.
Yeah, some of the stuff he does with his voice is just how on earth. Yeah, and he does all different voices, and yeah, it's crazy what he does.
It's just like a pleasure to listen to. I have like a tendency to really always turn back to like Corpse Grinder, his articulation and his power and the speed of his delivery and the consistency of his tone. It's always something that I always strive to be closer to.
And like I was saying, like, you guys, you've never rested on your laurels, and you've never taken the easy path either. That's one thing that needs to be respected, and I don't think Cretopsy gets enough credit for that. You could quite easily have just put out, you know, album after album of what certain people expect of you, but you always throw something different in and, you know, ride the wave of what comes for it, for better, for worse. And let's talk about the Book of Suffering. So this is part one, came out in 2015. You're just about to unleash part two. Is this going to be a continuing thing, or is it something you're drawing a line under now?
There's been discussions of a tome three. It's always been like a three-part thing in our mind.
Okay, yeah.
It depends what happens and where we go with things. And I have like a concept in my mind lyrically where I would take a tome three as a three-parter.
Yeah.
Like a concept for cover art. It's just a matter of sitting down and actually writing it and getting it going, because we're rather tedious when it comes to writing stuff, and it takes us quite a while, which is why we're doing EPs instead of albums at this point. We'll see what happens in the future.
What can you tell us a bit about the concept as well?
Yeah. It's called The Book of Suffering. So I went with like an umbrella spectrum of suffering being the overlying theme throughout all three EPs. The first EP is about people who have caused suffering. So I went in and like found horrible stories, which were based out of Canada, from Guy Turcotte, who's a local Quebec person who killed his children because his wife was cheating on him, and then he pled insanity, and then he's gonna like get out of jail in the next few years, which is just insane to me.
Yeah.
So that's like tome one is all based upon things like that. Tome two is about people who have escaped suffering. So I've escaping suffering in different ways. There's one song about an elderly couple who were in the Holocaust together. They escaped together. They fell in love. They moved to Canada. They fell in love after they were both married and both of their spouses died of cancer. They moved to Canada, fall in love, and then they both start getting cancer and are dying. But instead of suffering and dying from cancer, they decided to jump off their balcony and die together. So I mess around with like the term of escapism, you know, being in control of your own suffering. And then tome three is going to be about people who have witnessed suffering. So it's like very broad. I can just like pick and choose a whole bunch of stuff everywhere. I think that makes my job easy.
The concept of suffering. And yes, no, but it's a great way of, yeah, there's different ways of looking at things.
And then like different like angles and stuff too.
Yeah.
Like, mess with that too, like not just being the main character, but being like the main person in the story, but someone else that's telling the story. I enjoy messing with lyrics like that.
One thing I wanted to touch on is that I see for the first part that you did dabble with crowdfunding a little bit. Let me know how you got on with it. Me, I'm okay with it as long as you're getting something for your money. You're not just like some bands that have took the piss and put crowdfunding so we can go out and play gigs and you don't get fuck all for it. They could just sit on their arse and you're giving them money. How did you get on with it and how do you feel about crowdfunding in general? And do you think it's the future? Me, not really. I don't think it is. But where are you with it?
When we sat down and discussed doing the crowdfund, it was only for Tome 1. There's like a bit of confusion of that on the net that people seem to think that we were crowdfunding the entire series. That's not true. We wanted 20K Canadian. Or US, can't remember, it doesn't matter, for Tome 1. And at the time, you know, Obituary had done really, really well with their crowdfund. Protest the Hero had done really, really well with their crowdfund. Other bands just, like, killed it. We offered a whole bunch of stuff. We followed through on everything that we offered, such as, you know, like, from lessons to, you know, the vinyls to the CDs, the T-shirts. We followed through on everything. We raised about 12,000 out of the 20, I think. And, you know, in the eyes of everyone, it's seen as a failure. But I don't see it that way. I think that, you know, raising $12,000, and there was like less than 400 backers, which is crazy if you think about that.
That's a lot of money from each person if you divide it up as well.
If you think about that, yeah. And then throughout the whole time, we always had like a Bandcamp store running. Like we were still getting supported through that. People were buying other merchandise. So there was still other money coming. It's not like people weren't funding the band or like back band, but I feel for some reason the crowdfund didn't resonate with our fans. I don't know why. I can't, you know, there's nothing that I could speculate. It just didn't click the way it did with the protest, with the Obituary fans. I can't explain it. It's not something that we'll do again. It was an extremely stressful time for the band to try to, you know, keep coming up with ways to generate press to motivate people to back us. I think crowdfunding is interesting. We won't do it again. We're just doing what we're doing now. We'll do from now on, just like a solid pre-order. And that's it.
I think value for value is important with crowdfunding, but it is just luck. It's hit and miss. Because we talked about doing like crowdfunding with our stuff and the podcast and having a Patreon, which seems to be the word at the moment, but we're never going to make any money. So we never really bothered because we don't do it. Primarily, we do what we do for free because we enjoy talking to people. We enjoy promoting new music and we're passionate about what we listen to and what we do. And we haven't earned a penny in the years we've done it. We're minus money.
We didn't do the Patreon because we were scared that no one would donate anything. And
it just looked silly.
Look like fucking, yeah.
We did discuss the Patreon route when that came about, but or like a Cryptopsy Elite. But, you know, honestly, we're such a band that, like, we come home and we have our family lives and some of us work. And, you know, Chris is always busy with his studio and Flo's playing drums and other projects. We don't have time to generate the content to keep this interesting for people, to make it like a monthly thing. I don't see it being viable in a realistic term for Cryptopsy to do this.
You have to be a full-time member and a full-time worker in a band to make it happen, I think.
There's different ways of looking at it, but we've debated about it quite a few times on the show, but I think the basic premise is this is a project. If you want the project to succeed, you can donate and vote with your wallet. And as long as everyone's honest and everyone's open, it can be a great thing. Now, I've participated in quite a few projects through crowdfunding. I've done Queensrÿche's last album. I did Seven Dust's acoustic album. I did Bloodshot Dawn's second album. I'm trying to think of a couple. And so far, I've always had good results. They've kept you updated with the project. And I think as long as you do it piece by piece, like one project at a time, it can work. But when the certain bands basically just want a monthly subscription basically for to keep the band going. And when I think it was Winter Sun, it was basically help build our own studio, and the album you got in return, you just got a load of MP3s. You didn't even get a CD. I thought that was excessive. But if people are happy to, this is the thing as well, like, it annoys me when people say you're exploiting the fans. It's like, no one's got a gun to their head. That is completely consensual, that transaction. If people want to give you the money, they will, and they did.
Well, I'll give you an example from a different spectrum. I've entered a Kickstarter for like a game on the PS4. It's like Shenmue, really old game that's just been re-released. It was on the Dreamcast, if you ever had one of them. There's the geeky thing for me, but I've given the money. Ultimately, I'm going to get the game. Cool, but it's been delayed for like another 2 years, so I'm waiting an extra 2 years.
Yeah, I get that.
Stuff
I know.
Like that, and that's annoying.
Certain things can go wrong. I'm saying the basic premise of it, and as long as that case it didn't go right. And I know Westfield Massacre's just released their album, and like half the lineup with the original pledge aren't even in the band anymore, and that sounded like a nightmare. That one I would have took my money back. But I mean, but then again, we interviewed Bloodshot Dawn, and we said, like, you know, how did it work out for you? And he said, like, we tried so hard to keep it value for money. In the end, they ended up losing money.
It's hard, yeah.
So, you know, you got to see it from the back. Because a lot of people say, oh, it's expensive for certain things. Like, yeah, but it's not a mass-produced project either, so...
It costs even more per unit.
It's going to cost more when you've only got 1,000 CDs printed than 10,000 CDs printed, you know? So, yeah, it goes back and forth, but I think you got to take it on a case-to-case basis. But I think a lot of bands are better off doing it one project at a time rather than...
You've got to take the emotion away from it, because ultimately you're a business if you're in a band, and that's... You got to take the emotion away from that side of it, or you're gonna end up with no money, or you're gonna end up making a podcast for fucking 4 years nearly and being skinned from it, like ourselves.
Yeah, but fans need to realise that as well, though. You know, you don't own the band. You know, you're paying for the products. But anyway, so we're gonna do a review. We're going to be doing Ancestors Suspended in Reflections, and Matt chose this album. The guest always chooses the album that we review. Yeah. And tell us a bit about this album and tell us why you chose it, and we'll go from there.
Oh, well, it just came out. I really, really like the label that it's on, which is, I should have done my homework. I think it's the dudes from the Oceans label, the Ocean Collective band. They have like a solid label that was put out really interesting stuff. Like they have like the new Mono coming out in January, and I'm like super obsessed with this album. It came out and I just started listening to it, and I was like, "What is this? This is really interesting." And it's not like super brutal death metal, so I'm disappointed. I'm sorry if I disappointed you guys there.
No, that's fine, because we found that the ultimately people who are in death metal bands don't fucking listen to death metal a lot, most of them smoke weed, and most of them get really stoned before they go on stage, and then just this brutal shit just comes out. We've had it a few times, man. It's strange. It's kind of like, that's my day job, but when I'm off stage, I'm going to go and listen to something a little bit more.
Pretty much everyone we interview that's in a death metal band, they are nothing like how their band sounds. So
it's like a cathartic, a therapeutic experience being on stage and writing our music. It's something that has to get out of us, and then once it's out of us, you know, we don't necessarily need to add more of it in my life. Yeah. so this album, I just like discovered it by scouring. I'm like a fan of that label, and I checked it out. And I was not a fan of the band, and I like delved into their back catalog after getting into this album. It's like a short listen. It's definitely not like an album that you would just listen to one song. It's like an album experience. It's like, it's not the most original material either, I'll say that.
Yeah.
But something about it that I find very organic, and the songwriting is extremely strong. There's an excellent like guest in musical instrument additions, which are like super interesting. And there's something about it. I'm like, I posted it on, the reason I gave it to you guys is that I posted it on Facebook and I shared it and it got one like, and I was like, what the fuck is this? Nobody knows about this album. Nobody knows it. Nobody gets it. I don't get it. And every dinner party I've had at my house, I'm like, you guys need to listen to this. Just sharing it with everyone. And,
sometimes you need to whack people round the head with a song to get them to listen. Sometimes yeah. It has to be done.
And I think they, like, I checked out their video on YouTube like 2 weeks ago and had 5,000 views. I was like, what is going on with this? It's such a good album. I like long, I'm a big fan of like post-metal, post-rock. So like, it really just like hit just the sweet spot for me, this album. It's like the Pink Floyd meets Mastodon meets, no, that's about it. Like it's like a Pink Floyd-y post-rock band, post-metal band.
So it takes us on to the first track, Gone. It as soon as you put it on, it gives you the impression about where it's going. And within the second sentence of my notes, slow-paced opener, and it's got a Pink Floyd feeling to it. And that's stoner vibes from the onset. And you realise from this first song that it's not gonna get any quicker. It's gonna stay around this area, and they're gonna have a little play with the sound. But it's definitely, like you said, it's music that takes you on a journey, and it's not something you could individually rip a song out and say, we'll just play that one as a single. You've got to kind of listen to it as the whole package, and you can definitely see where they're going with it, and you understand what they're doing with it from the outset. And Gone's an example of that.
Yeah, when we were sent the album, it was a band I'd never heard of, and first thing that struck me was the artwork. I think the artwork on this album is absolutely spectacular.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And this is definitely a vinyl job for sure for fans of the music. And it was a refreshing listen, actually, because, you know, we've been listening to a lot of metal recently. We're always getting albums to review and, you know, albums to listen to for an interview and whatnot. And I used to listen to a lot of stuff like this, and I haven't for a long time. And first thing that kind of struck me was that bands like Explosions in the Sky, Mono, I think you mentioned them earlier, didn't you, Matt? Japanese band Mono. It's very broad, it's very soundscapey, should we say.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
And there's, you know, a horizon you sort of picture whilst listening to this band. And this is a good thing to listen to, like maybe on a long drive or going for a run. And I think where we're just getting into autumn now as well, winter's ahead of us. It's, you know, you normally got bright, fresh days, but quite cold, but the sky's quite open. And this sounds like a perfect soundtrack for this time of year. And yeah, the opening track is probably about as heavy as the album gets, in all fairness. And you've got the sort of soaring vocals, the pretty big guitars. And yeah, certain elements of Mastodon, I guess you could say, are in there as well. Some of their sort of broader stuff. But yeah, no, this is a refreshing listen and an interesting start to the album.
So I did my homework there. It's Pelagic Records.
And Pelagic Records, yeah.
The dudes from the Ocean Collective there, that band. And they have a bunch of great bands, and that's really like, I do a lot of hunting and searching, trying to find new music all the time. I'm like super obsessed.
It's a great feeling as well when you discover an album and a band, and then you find out they've got about, you know, a whole back catalogue.
Exactly.
And you start working your way backwards. Yes. So that's always,
love that shit. That's what happened with me, like with Isis, with Cult of Luna. Yeah.
Another band I should have mentioned a minute ago, Oasis, whatever happened to them?
It's a hard one, though, because me and Joe have got an inbox stuffed full of fucking music we get sent all the time, and it's nice to find it on our own instead of getting it sent to an inbox. I have got, I'm sure Joe's the same, I've got about 1,300 emails that I haven't opened because I don't need to be listening to all of it. I want to find it myself. There has to be a natural search and find thing for me to get into it. And it just feels like overload, and it's always great when you find that band. Just like, oh, this is mine. This is music I've found. I've gone out, whether it be Spotify on random play or you just see it on YouTube. And there's something good to be said about finding music organically like that.
I'm always excited when I like, because I walk a lot. Throughout my life, and that's how I listen and discover to a lot of music. So I'll like just add it to my phone, and I'll go out, and sometimes I'll get like 2-3 streets away from my house, and I'm like, nope, I'm gonna just get rid of it. But sometimes it's just the gem. But I find the older I get, the less stuff I like.
Sometimes I can be a little bit like, oh, I'm sticking to what I know today because, quite frankly, I'm not in a fucking mood to listen to something else. And I would just stick to a certain band or a certain genre just to keep my mood in that space. So I can agree with that. So, like, we're on the next track. It's Through a Window. Like, the Pink Floyd comparisons are plain to see. It's not a poor imitation at all. It's almost like paying homage to it. It's mixed and produced well to a certain extent, but I'll come to that later. But these remind me, have you heard of a band called If These Trees Could Talk? This is like them, and I don't mind them either. It's the type of music that you play for yourself when it's time to chill. I think it's not bad. I am kind of finding myself expecting a little bit more from it, but it hasn't quite given to me what I want from it. It's not like I dislike it, but if it was on, it's not one that I go, boom, off it goes. I would leave it on. But like, if I was going to listen to this kind of genre, I'm thinking, well, I'll probably put Dark Side of the Moon on or something like that to get that kind of feel from it. But again, it's not bad music, and it's kind of journey music. And I'm a big walker myself. I'll go out and walk and go looking for old CDs to buy on my own, because I'll go to secondhand shops and you can buy them for like £1. And that just seems to be my weird hobby at the moment, is go and buy weird CDs for £1 and go for a walk and listen to some of it. And this is the type of album I pop on to go and do that. So yeah, it is a journeyful album.
I think, yeah, I mean, this is a really nice, peaceful beginning of this song, and I like the way it builds up, but it's hard to pick out, actually. This is the first time, really, since doing this episode now, that I'm doing the songs individually, because it's a 36-minute long album, but I do notice when you're at the end of the album, you go, oh, that went quick. Yeah. It does... You do fall into it and come out. It's a bit like a wave. It just takes you. And when you know, if you're swimming in the water and you are taken by a wave, you're pretty surprised how far you travel in such a short time. And you think, Christ, how did I get this far along the beach, you know? And, but yeah, I'm really liking this, the way this is just building up and building up. And this is the type of music Coldplay think they make, but don't.
Yeah.
It's more genuine.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is a lot of feeling to it as well. I would say that. One thing I would say a detraction about the mix, really, is the vocals are great and he can sing. He can fucking sing, but they're too low. And I understand why they've done it, because it's trying to give it that weird aura and that weird, you know, Floyd-esque feeling, and I get it, but just turn it up, because it would bring the tracks out a bit more. Just turn it up a little.
If you have got a good vocalist, use him.
Yeah, you've got to put your best foot forward, and they kind of haven't, and that's a detractor for it, because he can bash out a tune, and it needs to be heard a little bit higher to raise it up, because musically it's great and there's a lot going on, and sometimes maybe a little bit too much at times, but the vocal needs to be louder. It's and you being a vocalist, I'm sure you've noticed that too.
I just find it makes it hard to understand what he's saying, because it's so low. Yeah. I feel like it's like the type of album that I think I know what he's saying, and I hum and sing stuff along, and I'm sure I'm not saying the right words at all.
Yeah, there's lots of Roger Waters-esque production going on. Where he's got like a filter on his voice and stuff like that. You can tell they've enjoyed every single effect they could possibly fit into this album ever.
When you say about the Pink Floyd comparison, though, this reminds me more of later Pink Floyd, like David Gilmour led. Because David Gilmour, like sort of, so the last two, well, three albums, they put out an album last year or the year before. So you got the Division Bell. What was the one before that? Is it Momentary Lapse of Reason?
I think so.
Those two albums, again, were very... They were very sort of, yeah, very soundscapey, very dreamy. And, yeah, the edge and the sort of anger that Roger Waters had was missing from those albums. On the other hand, though, Roger Waters' albums missed the dreamy, out there edge that David Gilmour brought, you know. But yeah, this reminds me more of like Division Bell era Pink Floyd than, mind you, I suppose.
What was the album
before Dark Side? Was it Metal? The one that they played live in Pompeii? That was a bit more.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember the fucking name.
I suppose more like that.
I think so. Those first two tracks, though, The Gone.
Yeah.
And Through a Window. I sort of find, I always find myself being like, oh, those are two songs, but in my mind, it's just one song.
Yeah, it just flows completely into the next one, doesn't it? You wouldn't know.
That's the thing with the album. It does. It kind of does that. You're there and you're on that journey, and it's not one you can pick a 69 cents MP3 on iTunes. You couldn't do it with this album. You buy the lot and you listen to the lot. That you have to make time for it, which is an art in itself.
I find like I'll finally like realize on the third track, Lying in the Grass, that something's changed now. There's like a different texture, a different taste that comes in at that point, just like it slows down a little bit and strange. The organ, I really, it's cool that they have an organ and stuff, which is something that's like different nowadays. Well, it's not different in the grand scheme of rock music, but nowadays.
Yeah, it's got an interesting intro to it, and it's a very proggy overtones to it. It's definitely one you could sit back and roll yourself a fat one if you're into that, and listen to it. And this Lying in the Grass track is one of the strongest ones so far. It's one of them bands, though. It's a haunting track, and you'd have to be sat at wherever you are seeing them. You'd have to be sat down. You'd have to be in just chilled the fuck out and listen to it, because it's kind of going to take you on that journey. And again, it's the Roger Waters kind of feeling comes across in this. His vocals kind of do that for me, and that Line in the Grass has got that for me. It's a little bit of a departure from the first two, so I agree with you on that one.
Side note, I really like that new Roger Waters album very, very much.
It's not bad, actually.
I really like it.
Is this The Life We Want or something?
Yeah, like yeah. Way better than the McCartney one. I put them in the same group because they're old men, you know, but they're completely different.
It's McCartney. McCartney is McCartney. You just have to look back on what he's done. And I love the Wings stuff. Some of the Wings stuff is amazing for me, but yeah. He's still out there and he's still making music, so I'm happy for that at the very least. And he's from my home city, so I can't really say a bad word about him.
Exactly.
The Beatles.
But
we wrote that song originally on a piano, and John came along.
Show up.
And he said, that shit, we're not going to use it.
Do you know so what? When anyone ever does a Liverpool... Everyone who does a Liverpool accent always sounds really camp when they do it. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's just me coming from there, but I don't know. It's just one of them things I've noticed. It always makes me chuckle.
You don't sound like Paul McCartney, though.
Well, that's because I'm from a rough part. He was from a posher part. He was from a more expensive area. I was from an area where you get mugged if you've got a phone with a light on it.
Well, I think you would have got mugged if you had a phone with a light on it in 1960 as well,
They weren't as poor as where I grew up, put it that way. At least they had guitars. And so, you know what I mean? So for me to get a bass guitar back in the day, Jesus Christ, it took a long time saving, put it that way.
So, Lying in the Grass. I'm liking this one. I'm liking the little piano in the intro. And again, I keep saying this, but it builds up, and it sort of midway, it does just explode into life when the guitars kick in. And again, his vocals soar over the top. And I didn't really realize it until you pointed it out, Gully. But yeah, it would be good if his vocals were a little higher in the mix, because I think that emotion would come across a bit better. But no, I'm liking it. And yeah, I'm liking the way it kind of explodes, but then winds down again, and you've got that organ sort of just drifting you out.
Yeah, it's got us. Do you know what? I'll say this now. It's because of the genre of this music that it is going to be niche. But could you imagine if this was out in the 70s, how far it would take the band? Because now it's going to fall into the niche, and you've got to get people to focus on it. But if this was out in the 70s, this people would be blown away by it, because this was where it was at, and this has got a 70s vibe to it all the way through. And it's definitely one of them albums for me where I'm like, I'm not gonna say it's amazing and it's gonna change the world kind of an album, but I'm not gonna turn it off if it's on. I'm enjoying it, and if you can get something from music, then it set its purpose, and they've set the stall out well with it, I would say.
Moving on to the next track, Into the Fall. When I mentioned Mono earlier, this track is, yeah, this has Mono all over it. It has all the different instruments. You've got a couple of different, just about like a different texture, different sounds, and you've got some strings in the background as well.
That whole violin thing is insane.
Yeah, and the thing is, it starts off quite lively. You've got, you know, some good drumming going on, and you're thinking, right, you know, this is like an up-tempo song, and this is going to be like the rocking one. But then it just winds down again. And yeah, you're left with this sort of dreamy soundscape, which again eventually builds up, and we're thrown up in the air again, really.
Yeah, it's a bit heavier, the intro as well, and it's not overly so. They verge on being, oh, we're gonna get heavy, and then we go, oh no, let's pull it back. Exactly what you just really said. But it's got the orchestral overtones to this are quite cool, to be honest, and it's definitely one for chilling out. But they have gone a little bit mad at times with the effects. It's definitely a homage to stoner rock and prog rock in general. The vocals, again, it's another example where it needs to be front and centre. But there's got some sinister overtone to this song. It has got like a little sinister vibe that reminds me of The Final Cut by Pink Floyd. It's got that kind of dun 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 shit going on in the background, which I'm thinking, yeah, it's got a sinister little background to it, and I like that song for it, and I like not like The Final Cut, the song itself by Pink Floyd. A lot of people don't like that song. I actually think it's a cool fucking song, so fuck everyone else. But I like it. It's sinister. It's there's a lot going on, but maybe they over-egged it a little bit and turn your vocals up again.
Go ahead, Matt.
No, I like it a lot. It's that whole violin section is. So interesting, that whole idea. They have these like guest musicians that come in, and that playing is just out of this world. There, that little violin solo in the middle there is just tickles my fancy very well.
They're not scared to experiment, definitely. Sometimes it works, and sometimes it's not quite hit the mark. But the violin thing is on point. I would say it's different, and you're like, wow, I didn't think that would happen. And you're like, ooh, it's happened and it works. So, yeah.
It's the type of band I'd love to see live, but I'd probably be disappointed.
I don't know. Yeah, I was going to mention this later, actually. I'd be interested to see this band live and how they carry it across. And if done right, the album wouldn't even do it justice.
They're going to have a very powerful laptop for all the voices to be playing in the background, put it that way.
Yeah, yeah. I picture it like, in my mind, I picture it like on this huge stage with like the screens, projections, and like backup singers, and all the ingredients are all there. But in real life, it's going to be like four dudes on a tiny stage with a backdrop.
With a MacBook.
With a MacBook. And I'm going to be just with a shitty sound house sound guy or something. Yeah. And I'll just be this.
And the thing is, the laptop's going to be like fucking nearly on fire because of all the shit they're playing and all the programming they've had to do to make it sound half as close of what they've got here, which is, you've got, okay, I can see that they've gone and they put as much as they can into it, but realistically, would this translate to a stage? Not really.
Lots of finance.
It could be, yeah, but at the level that this band are at, they're going to struggle. But
I hope that they can pull it off.
Yeah, they may have to, I don't know, they're going to have to put more emphasis on the guitars, I think, and just sort of project the heavier parts. But yeah, if the band get big and have a, you know, a bigger production to take it on the road,
If they could do it, but it's gonna be hard fucking work. Like one of my friends is.
It's gonna be so. It's gotta sell out every night.
Yeah, pretty much. They got and for all the different instruments that are involved with this, they're gonna have to have it. They're gonna have to have backing tracks, etc., etc. And bands that have backing tracks, okay, if you can do it, you can do it well. But 9 times out of 10, you can pick up on it, and you're like, yeah, it doesn't kind of translate as well. But the next song is Release. This is definitely a concept album that needs to be played in full. It's akin to Floyd again. And this song in particular, it's an ode to the Machine. You kind of can see how much they've been influenced by them. It's not a bad thing, but like, it's good. But 2 minutes in, it kind of changes into something else. It evolves into an upright bass and like a xylophone kind of thing. And then
jazzy section.
Yeah, it does. It's like kind of like when you're in the, when you're waiting for a film to start and it's just playing music show and you go to the store, buy some fucking popcorn. But like then it picks up with the menacing sounds and machine like keyboards, and it's pleasant. But at the same time, I've kind of have heard it before, and I can see where they're going. But it's not a shit song. I enjoy it, and I like the change in the middle too. So I don't dislike the music. It's quite pleasant, but it's something that's being there and it's being done, which is a slight detractor, I would say.
Keep in mind as well, sorry to interrupt, but the Lying in the Grass finishes with this melody, dun, 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 dun. And then that melody though carries on into the song, so as it winds down and builds up again, just with that melody is the one that connects the two, and then you just got this like keyboard in the background, and then just as it builds up, it just cuts, and then you're into this. I don't know how to describe it really. It's just like a, it sounds like wind chimers or something, but it's with keyboards. Yeah,
they've gone all out on the weird effects. They've totally gone all out. You can tell they've sat there with the respective like keyboards and their Axe FX has gone fucking through the roof on this album. Like they've literally sat there and
it's kind spent of like a lot. It's kind of like a light jazz though. You're right there.
It is mood music. It's like do I'm on hold kind of thing going on. There is a light jazz xylophone vibe going on halfway through it, and it's quite pleasant. I'm not disliking any of it. I'm more of a Marmite reviewer. I either really really like something or tend to detest it. But this one, it's kind of, there's none of that, and I'm happily listening along, and I'm not hating it, so I'm enjoying it so far, I would say.
I was surprised my first listen through when it went from that ominous, drawn out key stuff, and then switching to the jazz section, upright bass, which sounds really good too, the recording wise of it there, and then it all builds up to like nothing, and then drops right back to the ominous key part there. I was like blown. I was like, this is awesome, but it's not original. It's just something. There's something organic about it. Something like humanistic. It's like, it paints a landscape, a picture. I like this track. Yeah.
There's something like you've heard, it's got that some familiarity to it as well. That you kind of think I've heard it before, but it's slightly different to that. So it gives you that familiarity, like putting on your favourite jumper. Like I've got a Pantera one on that I've had for fucking years, and I've like lost a shit ton of weight and it's huge on me, but it's comfortable, and that's why I put it on. And this album so far is like a comfortable album to wear. It's kind of like that. And that's where it takes us on to the Warm Glow. And this is a long track, but you don't notice how long it is, though. That's the thing. It seems to be at odds with other tracks in the vocal style, and it's slightly off key at times in the intro. And I know that's a thing, but I don't enjoy that off key stuff. It gets on me tits. But the music's just too high. There's overemphasis on the music and a lot less on the vocals, and it feels hidden and patchy. And like you said before, it's difficult to understand what is being said. And if you have the ability to sing like this, you should show it off and you should flaunt it, because I know that the singer does do a lot of the other musical bits too, and you can tell he's more comfortable in that than himself, and he shouldn't be like that. He should be at the front, forefront, and if you could sing like he can sing, you should be at the front. And all in all, as a package, it's not a bad effort, and it's not something I've disliked so far, but you can see where the influencer drew from. But just turn the vocals up. You're a great singer. Show it off, man.
I think with the good sign, when it comes to long songs, the fact that you don't know it's long is when you've done it right. And bands don't ever try and write a long song. Write one by accident and you're doing well. When you go, bloody hell, this song's like 10 minutes long, I didn't even realise it. That's when you're onto something. If you try and do it on purpose, you've lost it. But I think this is a great way to close the album. Again, I know I keep saying it builds up, but it does. It just goes from level to level. And it never seems to be intense, though. It's a very emotionally heavy song. Not so much sonically. And I'm just trying to phrase it, really. It's it just seems to come in waves, and it just goes from layer to layer and just gets bigger and bigger. And yeah, rather than it getting heavier, it's more expands.
It's like intense, like super intense there. That
and then it just suddenly cuts. And we're back to the peaceful bit again. It's quite cathartic.
And then it's over.
Yeah. And you go, what was that all about?
Started again. I started again. I'm like, okay, again. With that whole like, na, 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 feel your heart. It's amazing. So intense.
Yeah, I'm not... It's great stuff, the vocals as well, and I get annoyed the fact that it's not there, and I'm a pisser for fucking clarity in the music. I'm just a pisser. I spend so much on fucking like decent headphones and decent speakers and monitors and all this shit because I'm a stickler for it, and when it's not done right, it detracts away from it, and I find myself, when I shouldn't be because it's so laid back, I find myself slightly getting pissed with it. I'm like, you can fucking sing, turn it up, just push that slider just a little bit higher, because you can do it and you should show it. And there's a lot of that going on with it, and I've not been like this. Even most albums, there's always one song where I'm like, you know what, you can fuck this song off because it doesn't work. But this whole album is
that's a package. That's a very good point,
and it fits
together,
and it all works.
Yeah, you're right there, because we've said that a lot in recent reviews. So it's even become like a section in the show, isn't it? Like, what bits would we take out? And you don't need to take any of this out. It's 36 precise minutes, and everything is in its place, and nothing needs to be added, nothing needs to be taken away. This is exactly where it needs to be.
It's where does it stop and where does it end? Because you don't know.
If you
don't know where you are sometimes with it.
Yeah, and you do get to the end, and you're like, oh. And like, well, the first time I listened to it, I was surprised at how quick it went. Oh, it's finished already. And then it was like, well, that was interesting. I wasn't quite sure what I thought of it, but put it on again. And the cycle repeats. And I think that is a sign of a good album, when you're not quite sure what you think, but you keep listening anyway, and you find more and more interesting things the more listens you give it, and this definitely does reward repeated listens, and I think that's one thing Matt's touched on.
Yeah, I love albums like that. Just something when you go back and then you can analyze and watch. It's like watching Inception over and over again. It's like
layers, so many layers that you can hear certain things. I still say they are guilty of being in a studio that has all of the effects ever. And they've just gone, woo, let's fucking put that in. Let's put that shit in. Let's put some more of that. But there is times where they've done it well, where there is a lot of layers. You can find a lot from it and you can draw stuff from it. And the emotion is in the music. Definitely that's there too. But you can see where they've drew their influences from, and it is an ode. It is an ode to that 70s Floyd era. It really is, and I'll still say that if you put this out in the 70s, this would be selling by the shit ton. And now it's more of a niche thing, and it does take people like us to say, hey, go listen to this and check it out, because a lot of people won't hear it, and that's sad, because there's a lot of feeling and a lot of heart being put into this album. You can see that.
That's why I wanted to bring it here. Sure. I would rate this album a solid 7.5 out of 10. It is not original, but there's something humanistic and organic to it. It is an album listen, which is something I enjoy. It's more than just a verse, chorus, the song is over. There's a lot of thought and calculation that went into the construction of the album and how to either fit the songs together or write an entire album and fit it into songs. It was an extremely enjoyable listen that I keep finding myself going back to explore again.
I'd give this album a good 8. As Matt said, it's not the most original, but it is very well executed. And this was a refreshing listen for me. I've not listened to anything like this in a long time, and it's made me want to dig deeper into the band. It makes me want to dig out some of the mono CDs I've got that I've not listened to in ages. And yeah, this is why we always get the guests to choose something to review, because we get to listen to something a little different as well. And I think when you get a musician to choose something to review, it shows the whole point of doing an interview is to show a different side to yourself and let people listen to your music from a different angle, or an angle they may not have listened to begin with. And I think you've done that brilliantly with this episode. And yeah, it was a nice little surprise. So thanks for choosing it. And yeah, this is a good 8 out of 10 for me.
So I'd give it a solid 7. I don't really have anything bad to say about it besides the vocals, and the over-egging is apparent. They've kind of gone a little bit overboard. If this came out in the 70s, people would eat this shit up, but it's 2018, so most people won't hear it, and it's niche, and it's good that we've had that platform to say, hang on a minute, listen to it. And I'm not adverse to this type of music. If these trees would talk as a regular on my phone when I'm off on me big walks to go and find weird CDs to listen to, this will go on there, and I will go back and investigate this band myself in that respect. And a solid 7 for me, and I enjoyed it. It's took me on a journey, and it's something I would definitely listen to again. I just hope with hindsight they'll look back and go, hang on, maybe we should bump the vocals up because the man can sing. Let's hear it.
Having explored their back catalogue after listening to this, there was like a break. I don't know. They were like in a hiatus for like a good 4 or 5 years from previous albums. They're on a different label for that. And the other albums are actually a little bit heavier.
Really?
The vocals are a bit more screechy at times there. Like their previous one came out in 2012, and it's an hour and 6 minutes long, so, and it takes like a long time to get through an album, but it's equally interesting. But there's times that I found myself, you know, it wasn't as concisely edited and written. There's times I felt that was a bit long standing. The album sort of dragged on a bit. They were on TP Records before that, and even more, like there's one track that's like pure Floyd, even more Floyd worship, where the riff even sounds like a Floyd riff. So on the previous album called In Dreams and Time, but I still suggest it's really interesting. There's a track with like a female vocalist at one point. I think it's The Last Return, the second track.
It's definitely something to look out for. And if you haven't heard this and you're listening to this podcast thinking, hang on, they've just done really heavy shit all the time, well, no, we don't. This is an example. Go out and listen to it. If you love your Floyd, you're gonna like this. If These Trees Could Talk, you're gonna like this. You like your melodic, emotion filled music, then this is where you're gonna find it. So that's it. I've enjoyed it. It's been a good listen for me, and I'm not averse. And I've smoked the odd reefer inhale to this. This stuff kind of floats my boat. So I've enjoyed it so far, and it's definitely something I'd go back and listen to the other stuff as well. But it's been a really enjoyable episode to do. And Matt, thanks for putting us onto it. So I know that you've got your EP. The second part is coming out on October 26th. Tell everyone where we can find the band and how do we reach out to you and get your music.
On October 26th, we're releasing the second part of The Book of Suffering called Tome 2. It will be available on iTunes. You can get it through our Bandcamp. It's going to be on Spotify by that point. You can contact the band through our website at cryptopsy.ca or through our Facebook page or on Instagram. We're going to be on tour in Europe with Aborted, Benighted, and Cytotoxin, and then we're in November, and then we're coming to the UK at the end of November and early December alongside Aborted, Ingested, and Unfathomable Ruination.
Sounds like awesome stuff. We'll try and get down to see us when you're in London, because that's where we're at. So thanks very much for coming on. It's been a musical journey, and I think we've all enjoyed listening to this one because it's something from the right side which we haven't even thought to listen to, or even for that case review. So if you want us to review an album, go on Twitter at rockshowonline. We really need to change the name, but we're too lazy. Also on Twitter, facebook.com the rockshowonline. Thanks very much for coming on, and thanks everyone for listening. See you later.